Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
You got that right, Bill Rock, and a good morning to everyone. Nice to have you aboard here, and Mr. Mayor, of course, good morning.
Windy, subject of conversation on the train this morning.
The weather.
Yeah.
Ugly. Nothing you can do about it.
Nothing, but you can take care of it. I mean, we make a big deal of making sure construction sites bolt everything down. There's still things. There's just so many construction sites. But hopefully everybody pays attention.
Speaking of construction sites, the one I walk past every single day, twice a day, the Deutsche Bank building. Guess what?
It's gone.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
I mean, the biggest problem with getting it down was... probably was over budget. It certainly took an enormous amount of time, but two lives were lost, two firefighters, which is very tragic. And after that, the other stuff really doesn't matter. You know, who cares? It's, if we could have avoided those lives, I would have taken 2 years more.
The other day, too, when it snowed, I walked by, and the trees that they've got planted at the memorial at Ground Zero were all dusted white, and the place looked beautiful.
It is going to be a great...
Even as a construction site.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great memorial, which will, I think, suitably honor the memory of those lost for the families, which is one constituency. The much bigger constituency is to tell the world what happened there and to remind them that our freedoms are fragile and you're going to constantly have to fight for it. The construction around there will make it difficult to get on the site. You'll only be able to get on from one side, you know, for a year or two. Okay, you know, that's part of rebuilding. And I think when they're going to write the history of this site, people are going to be surprised. Doing a real analysis, it is probably the most difficult construction project ever. Everything's built on top and around and inside each other. The political world, where you have two states with one organization, the Port Authority, the individual states. We've had, I think now, 8 different governors between New York and New Jersey since 9/11.
Never makes a job easy.
Never, because each one has to, one appoints the chairman, one appoints the executive director, and both want to, I think legitimately, say stop for a second and let me figure out whether it's going in the right direction, whether I should make any changes. I think Governor Cuomo was right in keeping on Chris Ward as the executive director. Governor Christie chose to change his chairman. Tony Kosher was a great guy. And the new chairman I've talked to on the phone, and I think he's going to be good as well. I think Kosher was timed. He probably wanted to did it for a long time. He's got other things to do. But, you know, the next big leases you'll see signed, there'll be a bunch of them down here. Once you get one or two people, once people see it's the end is coming. There's an article in the paper today, the Calatrava terminal is going to be 2% more than what it was cost, 2% more is the estimate today than years ago. In all fairness, that's not bad forecasting. These things aren't specific. And you can go and you can prevent these kinds of things, but just by vastly overestimating the cost. And then, of course, there's you work up to whatever the barrier is.
No matter what it is.
Right. So you're better off underestimating, forcing people to watch the pennies. The trouble is then when you have to raise it because of costs or things beyond your control. Or a lot of times, a lot of these big projects, you start down the road and you say, you know, as long as we're doing this, somebody's got an idea. It would also do something else for a small amount of money if we added to it. And then you add to it. Now, I'll never forget reading in the paper, Rudy Giuliani redid the Tweed Courthouse, the outside. And the stories were he went double the original estimate. Well, it was true the city spent double the original, but what they decided to do after they spent the same amount of money they promised on the outside, they decided to do the inside, which made a lot of sense, and that cost roughly the same amount. So, you know, Rudy did a good job, but he got criticized for it, and that's the conundrum you always have with any of these big projects.
Your reaction yesterday to the demonstrations on the steps of City Hall, the words that were used to demonstrate against Bloomberg's anti-union position.
Yeah, I didn't realize we had an anti-union position.
I didn't either, but...
If you really think about it, New York City's going in the other direction. We are trying to have... Albany turn over to us the authority to negotiate more with the unions rather than less. I happen to think that the unions are, without unions in a city our size, it would be very difficult to manage the workforce. The unions help in training and in management and in allocating resources. So on balance, there's some things I agree with, some things I don't. Some unions I think are very well led in the city, some I don't think are, but that's up to the members. I keep saying union's job is to get as much as they can for their members. That their job is not to make the process better. They, as citizens, they should want to make the process better, but the union leader's job is to get the most. It's us that have to negotiate with them, and that's why I'm optimistic that Governor Cuomo will have some real reforms in terms of turning things over to the city so the city can negotiate with the unions.
Your reaction to Wisconsin and what is going on in Michigan and Ohio?
I don't know. I mean, that's their job to figure out what's right for them. We shouldn't be preaching to them. I'm concerned about making sure that people in New York City, I think they have a right to organize if they want, and I don't think we should take that away from anybody. That's democracy. And should stay part of the process. I think just what's happened over the years, Albany, more than anybody, and the city can always, when salaries go up, pension costs go up and over the years. But fundamentally, we can't negotiate pensions. Albany just gives them sweeteners, and we have to pay. And mostly, not 100%, a little bit because of a change in assumption, a little bit because of the market, but mostly because pension benefits were vastly increased by Albany. The city's pension costs have gone from $1.5 billion in 2002 to $7 billion this year and $8.5 billion next year, and we've cut five plus billion dollars out of our expenses with all of these programs to eliminate the gap. But the pension costs have gone up faster than that.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the terror plot that was busted up yesterday.
And here we go. We've got a whole bunch of folks on the phones already, but a couple open lines, 800-321-0710, 22 after 8 o'clock.
This morning, I am reading in the newspapers, and over the last 24 hours, people talking about eliminating last-in, first-out, LIFO, people I never thought I would hear it from. Randy Weingarten over in New Jersey. You've got Cory Booker and Chris Cerf and the governor, of course. Well, I mean, I have to give you... you got you and Joel Klein and Kathy Black. This has been a long slog, and you guys are the ones who were behind it.
Well, I think, in all fairness, a lot of people. I think if you talk to Michael Mulgrew, the head of the UFT, he doesn't agree. I have a lot of respect for him, and we get together, and we will work together no matter how much we differ on things. This is one of the big things that we differ on. I respect loyalty, and as you know, in my company and in the city, I always get criticized for having enormous loyalty to people and sticking by them through tough times. I think that's the way you attract good people. And there's an awful lot to be said for teachers getting better with experience. You learn, and it's not just the first 5 years, as some people think. I think there's, you know, teachers have been there 25 years will tell you they learn every day. That's not what you're trying to do, and we've made sure that the economics in the school don't give a principal an incentive to get rid of a higher-priced teacher. The way it works is no matter what the price of the teacher, the principal gets credited with the same amount to take that out. That was Klein's idea, and it's a good one. But there are young teachers, old teachers, middle teachers that are fantastic and keep getting better, and then there are those that unfortunately aren't good, and I think we have a responsibility to work with them because we've got a big investment in them. Our first priority is the kids, but when you have a teacher that you've had for a long time, you've got an investment in them, and you may be able to leverage that and give them some remedial help. But if it doesn't work out, or they don't have the drive or care, or they just don't have the skills, then as nice a way as you can, but you have to separate because it's our kids that are suffering. I think this is an idea that's time has come. And when you look at the polls, I mean, 85% of the people, and, you know, there's a lot of legislators who would be normally you would expect because of pressure from certain special interest groups very reticent to sign on to this. They're going to start to look at these polls and say, wait a second.
The governor sounds like he's just about there.
Yeah, I talked to the governor yesterday. I think this governor, you know, I think he has had a big win with the Medicaid, the health care committee that he set up. A lot of people were skeptical that it would work. Our people, and we had Linda Gibbs, our deputy mayor, is on the panel. Our analysis of it is it's, you know, nobody wants any cutbacks, but it's better for the city than it could have been by a lot. And some of the things I really agree with, limiting to what...
I was pleasantly surprised to see that.
Yeah, because you just can't get... No doctor wants to go into obstetrics because the liability of the insurance has cost you too much. And that's not good. We need doctors to go into all of these disciplines. Managed care. Managed care is a time that's something that's come. We should do managed care every place. It's the only way is you have somebody saying, wait a second, we're not going to just spend money willy-nilly. Otherwise, there's no gating, and everybody, you, me included, if that was the way, the system that you and I were in, we'd just say, well, why not spend it? It doesn't cost us anything. Here it does cost something. So I think the governor's done a good job there, and, you know, there'll be a lot of yelling and screaming and fighting, and he won't get everything he wants, but that's the real world. Now's the time for pension reform and changing some of these laws. Last in, first out is certainly something to be changed.
What's necessary
also, we
to
wanna,
do that?
The legislature has to pass a law, period. There's about 15 states in the country that have last in, first out for education. And it's totally up to the legislature. They've just got to pass it. So I've urged the governor to put it into his budget because the budget you know is going to get passed. That actually gives some cover to some of the people who say in their heart of hearts they know it's right, but they don't. They're worried politically. And I'm sure nobody ever votes what's for politics,
right?
But let's assume that there was some person who did. This would give them cover. It's in everybody's interest. And most of the teachers, you know, look, they want to be proud of and have nothing but good teachers on their side. Their careers depend on the people they work with. They know the kids depend on them. So I think you're going to see that. It's interesting. Wisconsin's going in one direction. We're going in another. I mean, we are going in trying to get more things to negotiate with the unions, because I've always been a believer the unions net-net, on balance, are positives. Do they want more than we can afford? Yes, that's their job. The union leader's job is to try to get as much as they can.
So you see no conflict with public sector workers negotiating a contract?
With the city, no. I see no conflict. With the state, yes, because the state doesn't pay them. The state does not. I mean, the state may get some support when they're re-election campaigns from some of these unions, but the state doesn't come up with most of that money. For most of the unions in New York City, it's the city taxpayers that pay. And so while the same, I've always thought that people have a right to organize and be represented. Workers, their organizations are called unions. The public, their organizations called government. We have a right to organize as well, and we have, but we also have to have the ability by law to do it, and it's the law right now that keeps some of these things in Albany and prevents the city from negotiating. So we're sort of going in a very different direction, and, you know, which is right. It's not for us, not for me anyways, to tell other states or other cities what to do. I think this is right for the city, and I think, you know, the city is doing... We have certainly have plenty of problems, and the recession has not left us totally out of it, but we've done pretty well. Our workforce, I've said this for the last 9 years, I've worked in the private sector and the public sector. Our workforce produces a very good product. We should all be proud of it. Everyone? No. Every time? No. But, you know, come on. We have 300,000+ workers. We have a budget of $65 billion. We're into every single thing you can imagine and a lot of things you can't imagine. I think, on balance, the city is well served by its unions. It has to make sure, however, that it doesn't give away things we can't afford. And if we had things in the past that we negotiated, that doesn't mean they have to stay. Nobody signs a contract forever. You do things that are appropriate for the times, and when the times change, you adjust. We have different revenue sources. We have different needs. We have different abilities to pay. And these things, because they were given away in the past, there's nothing magical about them staying anymore. We're not guaranteed revenue by some mythical body. Our revenues fluctuate with the health of this city and the health of the economy here nationally, worldwide, and the different needs of the public. The public wants some things today they didn't ask for before. And so we've got to accommodate those things within the same budget. So, you know, all these things have to change. But put me down on the side of, I think on balance, the unions here have been a big plus for the city.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the half hour is reached. 8:30 is our time. Let me take a fast break, and we'll get you some news. We'll be right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
One, two, three, four.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4. See, we can count. How about that? Another terror plot busted up. New York, right at the center of it, once again.
You know, evidence. It's a dangerous world, and we just cannot forget it. We talked before about the what to me is the one of the two big purposes of the World Trade Center Memorial is to remind us somebody tried to take away our freedoms and killed 3,000 people. Fortunately, didn't succeed. But where anybody that thinks that we shouldn't keep fighting terrorism from outside or inside and street crime from outside or inside, or I guess it's all inside, is just making a mistake. A civilized society, first and foremost, you have to be able to walk down the street without looking over your shoulder. If you don't have that, you don't have the tax base to do everything else that we need. Education, I keep saying, is the most important thing. Yes, but it presupposes. And, you know, our crime rate keeps coming down. It's been coming down, coming down. You know, nothing to please me more to make sure it keeps coming down for the future, and not just during our administration, afterwards. I'm going to live here.
I wanted to ask you about last Sunday, you being a helicopter pilot, what you thought of those NYPD guys that rescued the two West Pointers off the cliff in the middle of the in the nighttime, hanging 50-mile-an-hour winds.
Well, flying at night is easier than flying during the day. It is not easier when you're next to a cliff and you have winds and all.
Exactly.
You know, that. But that's why good pilots train all the time. And you say, you already know how to fly. No, you don't. You always have to keep, because you have to do things instinctively. You don't have the time to sit
to
and
think
about it. It's not an exam on a piece of paper. This is your life, and other people's lives depend on it. You know, and these guys are trained. Are they have a lot of guts? Yes. Do they put their lives in danger all the time? You know, but lots of cops, firefighters, lots of people do, or military. It was, you know, I read in the paper, the guy with the cop who was lowered down was joking with the two kids. You can ask why the kids were there. You know, maybe
I
somebody,
don't think they passed repelling 101.
Maybe West Point wants to have a little conversation with them guys.
Yeah. Next time you want to do that, bring enough rope so you can
right.
get
right. But you know, at least for now, it's not all's well that ends well, because people's lives were jeopardized, theirs and the cops
sure,
who responded.
Absolutely.
So acting a little more responsibly. But having said that, let's not go and criticize them. That's for the West Point instructors to do. Kids do things. You got to remember, these are college kids. West Point happens to be a very good college. And they're lucky enough to go there. And, you know, it's great that they're devoting part of their lives, maybe their whole lives, to serving the public. But I think that the police did a wonderful job. But if you talk to them, they'd say, well, that's what we're trained to do. Of course we did it. It's nothing special. We do it every day. Sometimes it makes the paper. Sometimes it doesn't.
We're jumping around here. I read in the paper this morning, you're thinking of privatizing parking meters? Or
no, we're trying to hire somebody to take a look at all these things. Number one, we are not going to sell assets in return for money that we spend on balancing the budget. That's terrible. You might want to sell assets and use the money for other capital projects, and maybe you can do some things better in the private sector. The things that always get in the way are people sell it and then spend the money, and then you don't have the asset and you don't have the money. Or they turn over things that are really should be the responsibility of government to the private sector. And so we're not going to turn over the right to set parking rates or collect the fines or that sort of thing. But installing and maintaining equipment, there's nothing magical about that. If somebody wants to come and do it and we can reduce our costs, that's what's supposed to be, reducing our costs. I said before, we've cut $5 billion a year annually out of our budget. Unfortunately, other costs, which we're helping, which we need the governor to help us with, I think he will, have dwarfed that or gone in the other direction. But using existing spaces and existing processes and equipment, trying to improve the environment, use less energy, there are modern things that, you know, there's nothing magical about any one company, nothing magical about any one government, nothing magical better about private sector, public sector. I once did an analysis of picking up the garbage.
I was going to ask you about that. Have you ever thought about
privatizing? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the easiest place on a big scale to look is cost of picking up the garbage, private sector, public sector. Why? Because roughly half the garbage is picked up, the commercial stuff, by the private sector. Roughly half the garbage, the residential stuff, is picked up by a city agency. And it's a little bit hard to make a direct comparison because the city agency has to clean the streets and the baskets at the end of the block and plow and all of that kind of stuff and has other responsibilities. But fundamentally, it looked when we did this analysis that we're getting a decent deal out of government stuff and the private sector is doing as well, but neither side was doing dramatically better than the other. Now, some things I've certainly think you should not turn over, even if the private sector could do it more for less cost. For example, fighting crime. I think that police and fire and a few of these agencies are just too important to even think about turning them over. That doesn't mean they should do all the things they do. Ray Kelly and Sal Cassano are working hard to try to find ways to, you can use the private sector for mechanical things that they have to do, support services, but the cop on the beat and the firefighter on the engine or truck, you want those people, and then there are other parts of government.
Yeah, the selling off of capital things makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense whatsoever. It's a short-term fix, which leaves you in much worse shape down the road, and we're not going to do that. But here, all we've done is going out and looking for somebody to give us some advice and to look at the things, and then we'll see whether anything makes some sense, and we'll get plenty of input from a lot of people.
To put the size and scope of running this city into perspective, this might seem a little disconnected, but the PCB question in the schools and the light, the old-fashioned lighting that contains the ballasts and the this and that is a concern. What do I have here? 772 schools.
Well,
with lights,
I think it was the 50s and the 60s, every housing and office buildings and schools throughout the country, maybe throughout the world, put in these kinds of lights. PCBs were used in the ballast. Forget about why. It doesn't matter. Eventually, they stopped using them, but they're sitting there. If you talk to Tom Frieden, who used to be our health commissioner, who runs Centers for Disease Control, he basically says it's somewhat like asbestos in the walls. No problem unless you rip open the walls. So nobody goes and rips down every building with asbestos. If you did, you'd have to rip down every building or at least renovate them all. If you're going to open the wall with asbestos in it, then you take people out and you seal the building and you take great precautions. The same thing here. I've talked to one of our congressmen who's been pretty vociferous on this, and we sort of had an agreement, I thought, that we'll talk to Tom Frieden next week. Tom says basically that one tuna fish sandwich puts more PCBs in your body than breathing air in a normal school for your entire career as a student. So it's easy to rush and say there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with asbestos, if you're careful. Now, if a ballast is leaking and the leak gets outside of the light fixture, nobody questions that. Our problem is if you want to go and change it, and all of these would be changed in the normal course because light fixtures wear out. No light fixture lasts. The building may last, but the light fixtures don't last. If you had to do it all of a sudden, well, you have to close down the schools. Other than that, you have to do it only in the summers. Then there aren't enough light fixtures being made in this day and age. I mean, you know, it's enormous. We have 2,000 built.
Right.
Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. Our estimate was something, I don't know, 750 million, some estimates are a billion, but it isn't a quarter of a billion. It is an enormous amount of money that we should use for other things in education and elsewhere in the city. And if the scientists say there is no danger, that's what you have to go. And one of the congressmen said, oh, well, they said that breathing the air at the World Trade Center was okay. Number one, that's not fair because not all scientists said it. There were one or two elected officials that said it, probably in good faith. But even if they said it, doesn't mean it's right or wrong today. You have to go with the best science, particularly if you're talking about spending $750 million on something that you may or may not need, but you would do slowly over time anyways. So we're working with the Environmental Protection Agency, and hopefully we'll come up to a resolution that is safe for our kids, which is our first priority, but also gives us the money to keep a teacher in front of them.
Did you must have been disappointed in the science numbers, New York City's fourth and eighth graders compared to the national average?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it shows is we have a long ways to go. I actually met a teacher last night. I gave a little talk at 100 Black Men had their annual dinner. They do a lot with schools, some charter schools. There was a sixth grade kid who introduced me. I joked he could be the next mayor. He's got to be 35 first. He's got 20, 30 years to go.
We'll practice.
But I met this teacher. She's a science teacher at Stuyvesant. And I have no understanding of what she was talking about and what she teaches. Just a smart woman. And some of these kids are really, really smart. Some kids are going to go on to win Nobel Prizes. Other kids are not going to go on to win Nobel Prizes. I'm in the latter category. But we have a long ways to go. And science, mathematics. Mathematics is the most used language in the world, if you think about it. Every culture uses mathematics. We have lots of different languages we speak.
20, 50 times a day, you're just in transactions.
And the trouble is people think it's just, you know, rote. They don't. It's the concepts of, it's not so much how to add, it's when to add. Not how much to, how to subtract, but when to subtract or multiply or divide or anything else. And to understand proportions. And as I still use a slide rule, because it shows you the proportions. I've always thought that was useful. But with science, we have a long ways to go, and our science teachers are trying, and we just got to give them more support.
Speaking of schools, disappointed. Did you read the story about Columbia University and the ROTC guy by the name of Anthony Maschik?
He was a Iraqi vet, Afghaner.
Shot nine times, and he got shouted down.
Well, you know, on one hand, I suppose...
Freedom of speech,
and a lot of students do things without thinking, and later on they'll look back and say, why did I ever say that? The bottom line is, this is a guy who deserves an enormous amount of respect. These kids had the right to do what they did because he went overseas and put his life on the line. So, you know,
point he was making.
Yeah, I mean, you don't take away their right to protest. On the other hand, I think Columbia had said their reason for not having ROTC was that they have a non-discrimination based on orientation clause, and the military had no don't ask, don't tell. The president, as he campaigned on and promised, has fixed that or in the process of fixing it. I went to Johns Hopkins, and I think we have, still do, the longest continuous ROTC program in the country's history, and it's a reasonably liberal school. But there was never a lot of, right through Vietnam, which is when I was in college, and a lot of protests against the war. Not a lot that I remember. Maybe there was one or two, but I don't remember any of them. ROTC is a good thing number one, you don't have to do it.
Nope.
So it's voluntary.
Don't even pay any attention.
If you want to, they pay for your education, and the deal is you serve in the military. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of people would serve in the military anyways. They want to get the training. They want to see whether the military is right for them as a career. And I think Columbia should, my personal opinion, can't tell Columbia what to do, they should open an ROTC program and give the kids the alternative. These kids are protesting. My advice to them, don't join.
Okay. You know? All right.
That's okay. You don't have to join. But if others want to, let them do it.
I see we have a bunch of people that want to ask you a question, Mr. Mayor. Let me take a break first, then. And here we go, 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, you got your headphones
there? I'm ready
there
to go.
All right, let's go to line number 6 is where we're going to start. Chris, you got the mayor. Go.
Yes. Hello, Mayor.
Hi.
Bloomberg. I'm calling regarding the World Trade Center site, and I have a few questions. First of all, I'd like to know why the Port Authority disregarded every single poll that indicated the majority of Americans wanted the Twin Towers rebuilt. Secondly, I'd like to know why the Greek Orthodox Church was not rebuilt, and they had a contract to do so, the Port Authority, and now they're being sued by the church.
Well, number one, I don't know that everybody wanted the original towers to be rebuilt. There were some people. The original towers took a long time to fill, and in this day and age, I don't think any professional real estate person thought that if you rebuilt them you could rent them. Some people don't want to be in tall towers. Today, the technology is different. Having a number of smaller buildings, half the size, better fits the real estate needs today of people. Some people do want to be an iconic building and a very tall one, but there are plenty who want to be in 50-story
Freedom Tower
buildings.
Is pretty tall.
Yeah, Freedom Tower is 76 feet high. And just the economics just didn't make any sense. There were proposals to do it. I think Donald Trump said he would rebuild it. But the Port Authority listened to a lot of people, Chris, and not everybody was in agreement. In terms of the Greek Orthodox Church, they've gone back and forth. I'm sure a church is going to get rebuilt there. I think the church is working with the Port Authority, and yes, there's some lawsuits running around, but they'll come to an agreement. The bottom line is that the site is different than what it used to be before, and so the opportunities are different, but there will be a Greek Orthodox church down there.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. Let's go to Bridget. Hello, Bridget. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
Can we agree that cigarette smoking in public places is plain and simple rude behavior? And since public and smoking is banned now on above-ground train stations, would you consider expanding the ban to include bus stops?
Well, personally, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't want to stand downwind of somebody smoking because the smoke kills you. Also, in this day and age, since so few people smoke in so few places, it really is. You notice it in the ways you didn't notice it before. I mean, but think how far we've come. The impetus for banning smoking on beaches and parks actually did not come from either the administration or the city council. Together, we passed the law, but it came from the public. We had enormous number of people call and say, I don't like the butts in the sand. I don't like people upwind from me smoking. And government listens. If there's a big outcry for bus stops, that's the ways to get it done, Bridget. I think that if you're smoking near somebody, you should have some common sense and make sure you're not upwind of them. That is a consideration, so they should be considerate of that.
All right, Bridget. John has a similar question, Mr. Mayor. John, go ahead.
Hi. John?
Hello, yes. I'm curious as to what you think, Mayor Bloomberg, the great John Lennon would feel about not being able to smoke in Central Park.
Well, I don't know, but we could probably ask Paul McCartney, who would know, I think. Next time I see Paul, that's an interesting question. I'll ask him. Keep in mind, John, that what people did 20, 30 years ago and how they, awful lot of people smoke that don't smoke today. And, you know, the world has changed and people's interests have changed. And so what John Lennon might have thought then may be different than what he thinks today. So anyways, you want to take, let's go to Annette.
All right. Annette, it's your turn. I'm sorry. Let me go to, I got the wrong one up. My mistake. Annette, go ahead.
Annette,
yes.
Yeah, I want to know, can you tell me about the white lines that separate the lanes on the Bell Parkway? When will they ever be painted?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at that. Repainting, you can't do it if the temperature is something like below 45 degrees. So probably something like next week. Keep in mind, on some of these roads, like the eastbound belt between Mill Basin and Flatbush, the road service is really difficult. It's a top of a list for us to mill and repave. The trouble is we need 5 warm days in a row, and that's probably not until late March, early April, when you can depend on it, because once you start, you're sort of stuck. So the big fixing pothole season is coming up. We try to do as many as we can in the meantime. We've actually put a couple million bucks into trying to get more potholes fixed to the extent we possibly can. This on-again, off-again, cold, hot doesn't help. The plows don't help. But so far this year, we've repaired more than 113,000 potholes, which is 63% more than the same period last year. So we're working hard.
I've got a couple you've missed. I didn't know you were such a road guy. I didn't know you were such a road guy.
Absolutely.
Got to go. Speaking of the road, you got to hit the road. We'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right. 9:00.